afternoon, and welcome to Unity Church. I want to extend a special welcome to those of you who are here for the first time. We hope you find Unity Church to be a place which helps you find and keep your balance, a place which nourishes you and inspires you to lead a loving life of integrity, service, and joy. I'd like to call your attention, as we do each week, to This Week at Unity, the insert in your order of service, which seeks to inform you of the many events occurring in the coming weeks here. And one of the things that it highlights is the origin of the One More Redeemer quilt, and that the quilting group produces each time we dedicate ourselves to new children. And this one is special because it was a class actually offered, and some new quilters' stitchery is involved in this quilt. Our wonderful Wellspring Wednesday programming has ended for the season. It will begin again January the 10th, but we are offering a free evening of childcare. The staff and the 7th and 8th grade youth group will be caring for children, offering holiday crafts and activities. So if you are interested in having a free night of childcare, you are welcome to sign up at the Wellspring Wednesday table. This Sunday is the last Sunday to participate in our Model Cities holiday gift giving. We still have about 70 people who have not been spoken for. If you're interested in participating in the program but don't have time or interest in shopping, you can still donate money and the coordinators will shop for you. Ginger and I would like to greet you at the Portland Avenue doors at the conclusion of the service. Next week, Rob, Teresa, Justin, and I will be conducting the family holiday service, which will focus on Santa Lucia. Please remember that the 9 and the 4:30 services will have a friendly and somewhat mild-mannered carol sing. And the 11 o'clock service, however, will have what has now become a tradition here at Unity, which is called a carol shout. If you don't know what that is, you may want to come and check it out. But the decimals go higher than I think ever in the history of Unity Church. So decide what interests you most and choose accordingly. And again, welcome to Unity Church.
The first holiday card arrived last Monday. I loved the scripted words on the front. May the song of peace grow stronger. The card is from friends who take the day after Thanksgiving to write holiday greetings. They were at my home the day before, sharing Thanksgiving dinner, a tradition for about 6 years since I moved to a new neighborhood. The guest list changes a bit year to year, but basically we are a group who have no families in the area, so together we pool our resources for a potluck celebration. Offering my home for this occasion may seem like a generous gesture, but actually it is quite self-serving. Having friends in my home space, especially during a holiday, helps me beyond measure in dealing with a house not always comfortable and a neighborhood which often challenges my sensibilities. The painting on the card is an abstract watercolor with mixed greens, blues, blacks, and delicious yellow accents. The casual gestures of color and stroke are turned into art by the hand of a talented brush. I open the card and find a note inside that tells me to make sure to read the small print on the back. The painting, says the words, is called Brush Dance. The even smaller words tell me more. The brush dance is a Yurok Indian healing ritual where being true to yourself means giving your best to help a person in need. Being true to yourself is the one and only Yurok Indian law. This afternoon, may we find that deep kindness for ourselves and our world in this beloved community. Come, let us worship together.
And will you please remain standing and join with me in the responsive reading 521 in the back of your hymnal. May I be no one's enemy, and may I be the friend of that which is eternal and abides. May I never rejoice in the ill fortune of one who has wronged me.
May I have peace
never fail a friend.
May I
always keep tame that which rages within me. May I know good people and follow in their footsteps. Thank you. Every Sunday when we gather for worship, whether here in the sanctuary or the children's chapel upstairs, we pause for a few moments to expand the caring ministry of this congregation. Together we recognize the cycle of life and death, the circle of love, compassion, and witness that permeates this place. One of the ways we do this is by lifting up the names of people who we would like to bring into the sacred embrace of this gathered community. We hold in our prayers all those who live with grief over the loss of a loved one. We especially hold Ann Kirby McGill, Dave and Connor McGill in our prayers over the recent death of Ann's father, Tom Kirby. We hold in our thoughts those people facing their death with courage and dignity. We hold in our prayers those people recovering from recent illnesses, injuries, surgeries, and health problems. We especially call Susie McPherson to mind, who is recovering from hip replacement surgery. We hold in our prayers all those people struggling with addictions, depression, and ailments of the heart and soul. And lastly, we hold in our prayers all those around the globe suffering from poverty of spirit, of possibility, those whose lives are filled with uncertainty due to violence, hardship, and war. May we live to see a day when all our lives are filled with peace and the promise of abiding freedom. I now invite you to share the names of those people you would like to celebrate, memorialize, or bring into the embrace of this caring community. For the names which have been spoken and the names which remain in the silent sanctuary of our hearts, may we be forever grateful for this tapestry we weave together. And now will you join with me in a moment of prayer? O eternal Spirit, deep and abiding Spirit of life, you who we call by many different names and approach by very different paths, help us to know the presence of the Holy within our lives, among us in our communities, and in the realm of mystery, those places beyond human knowing and comprehension. Help us to have faith when we encounter the reality that everything beyond a certain distance is dark and unknown, a darkness heavy with promise and with challenge. Help us to illuminate the darkness with our own peace of divine presence. Let us be open to the miracles that this season brings. Frozen ice, broken in pieces on the shore, that become wind chimes as the water ebbs closer, creating a tune of ethereal magic. The burning bush that is resident within the decorated tree, and the miracle that our lives can be charged with glory, gladness, and gratitude, and that wonder can transform the weariest of hearts. May it be so, and amen. Thank you, Rob and Bill Neely. Thank you, Elizabeth Alexander. And thank you, Unity Singers. I'd like to take this opportunity now to invite Maureen Phillips to come up and make a special address to the congregation.
Good afternoon. For those of you who may not know me, I'm chair of the Board of Trustees here at Unity, and I'm here to talk to you about something that makes me really, really uncomfortable. I'm here to talk about money, my money and your money. I have to confess to you, I run like a screaming banshee when solicitors call me on the phone or come to my door. I hate it. I don't like sales pitches. I don't like people to tell me how to spend my money. On top of that, for those of you who don't know me, I'm a little bit of an introvert, and standing here and making a pitch about money isn't something I like to do. So why am I here? It's because I love this place deeply. And I think we're at a critical juncture in this church. Once again, our church has been gifted by the generosity of a whole lot of people. For those of you who have turned in your pledge, we're truly grateful and we give a heartfelt thanks. Let me tell you where we are. We're at about 90% of our goal. That means that we're about $100,000 short of where we need to be. So this message today is for those of you who haven't turned in your pledge yet. Lots of research has been done about the beliefs and attitudes held by various faith traditions about financial generosity. Some of that work suggests that at the core of these beliefs and attitudes are two fundamental questions. What kind of people are we? And what kind of people do we wish to become over the course of our lives? I've asked myself those same questions when I've made my annual pledge. When I ponder that, a whole host of experiences come to mind for me, experiences that have gifted my family in the 17 years that we've been coming to Unity. Please indulge me in one short story. Both of our kids grew up as beneficiaries of Unity's religious education program and the wise and very committed adults who are its backbone. For both of them, the coming of age program in particular was an incredibly powerful and life-changing experience. They were pushed to question, they were pushed to look inside, they were pushed to contemplate, they were pushed to be searchers. They were told it was okay to change their minds. They were told it was okay to only have questions and no answers. Indeed, coming of age frequently visited our home, and it sparked dinner conversations that were equally rich and defining. Jay and I learned right along with them. One day long, not long after our youngest daughter, Alexis, completed the coming of age program, I passed through Alexis's typically clothes-strewn bedroom, my blood pressure rising with every step. And then, my eyes landed on a note she had written and taped to the wall immediately above the light switch. In bold letters, this is what it said. How will you live your life so as not to make a mockery of your values? When I read those words, of course, I smiled, and of course, tears filled my eyes. Why, I do struggle with that question often. During the remaining years of high school for Alexis, new posters and bumper stickers came and went on her walls, but that little slip of paper above the light post, light switch, stayed. Who knows where that question came from? I'm her mom, I don't know. But what I do know is that Unity Church had a whole lot to do with it. As an adult, Unity pushes me to ask questions. How will I live my life so as not to make a mockery of my values? For that, I feel deeply blessed. This is one of the many reasons why I think my financial support to Unity is as important as my mortgage payment and my grocery bill. This place is my foundation. It's where I'm reminded of my moral compass. It's the place that nudges me when I don't feel like being nudged. It's the place that helps me put the rest of my world into perspective. This year, your board faces some very difficult budget decisions. Simply put, we face a dream gap. What we say we want to be and the staff and programming we have in place to be that, your dream, my dream, is bigger than our bank account. This is a defining moment, I believe. This is the moment when every single one of us needs to look inward and answer the question, how important is this place to me? And what kind of people do we wish to become? I have great faith in the strength and dreams this congregation holds. I hope you share that feeling, and I hope you will help us to ensure that who we are today will continue to be a reality. Thanks for listening to me, and thanks for your love and support.
Thank you, Maureen. As many of you know, the offering each Sunday at Unity now goes out the door. The recipient of today's offering is District 202, a community center that serves gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual, and queer youth and their allies. This was a site that was selected by our welcoming congregation group, and we are delighted to have them included in our generosity. As the plates pass, I encourage you to give generously. Will the ushers please come forward? To the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we give all our offerings. Thank you. I'd like to take this opportunity to invite Laura Schlatter to come up. And as I invite Laura to come up, I want to acknowledge to all of you that this is Laura's last in-gathering as membership coordinator. Laura has served this congregation with dedication, love, and vision, and we are all going to miss her terribly. Next Sunday, after each service, there will be a celebration of Laura's hard work, the fruits of her labor and her ministry. And I invite all of you, whichever service you choose to attend, to make sure that you drop in and help us celebrate Laura. So Laura, thank you.
Thank you, Jan. We celebrate in-gatherings of new members as part of our regular Sunday services every 2 months during the formal church year. You can contact me, Laura Schlatter, here at the church on Sunday, or at the church office during the week if you would like to participate in an in-gathering in the future or if you'd like information about membership. And I will be here through the end of December. After that time, actually, you can contact Laura Park, who will be my interim replacement. You can also contact me if you are already a member, but you would like to be better connected with one of the many small groups that gathers here. To be a member of Unity Church is to be engaged in a free and inclusive religious community that encourages lives of integrity, service, and joy. To be a member of Unity Church is to have a deeply meaningful, transforming, liberal religious experience, to feel connected to your religious community, and to live out your liberal religious values in the world. The people who will join us in the chancel in a moment have all signed the membership book this afternoon. Those of you who are already members, take a look at these new members, see who they are, remember them, and welcome them not only today, but in the weeks to come, in the pews, in coffee hour, or wherever you see them. We will be greeting them at a reception in the center room after the service this afternoon. Please feel free to stop by. And now, please join me in welcoming the newest members of Unity Church who have signed the membership book this afternoon. Nick Allen, John Butler, Shelley Butler, Alex Chandler, Ben Foote, Faye Foote, Will Hameyer, Jill Van Kulvik, Beth LaBreche, John LaBreche, Rose Nambozo, Allison Shank, and J.B. Shank. And now, if you will all rise as you are able and read with us the responsive reading for the ingathering of new members, which is printed in your order of service. We, the members of Unity Church Unitarian, welcome you and gratefully acknowledge your choice to join with us in our continuing religious life. Envisions the future and lives with passion in this moment. Even as we honor those who have brought us to this day, so we celebrate your newly found commitment and eagerly anticipate your contribution. Afternoon, we renew our covenant to seek and speak the truth, to love one another without prejudice, and to respond with concerted efforts to the demands of justice. As those who believe in religion, as those who believe in freedom, fellowship, and character in religion, as those who believe that the religious life means the thankful, trustful, loyal, and helpful life, and as those who believe that a church is a community of helpers, wherein it is made easier to lead such a life, we join ourselves together. Name Unity Church.
Welcome. Congratulations.
You may all be seated. The theme for this Advent season this year is peace. In an effort to bring peace, a greater sense of peace, into the services during this Advent season, we have added a meditation on peace. It goes, "When I breathe in peace. When I breathe out love." It is a chant that the Unity Singers will begin, and we invite you then to join in, and we will sing, chant it for 6 times. Thank you very much. Amaryllis. A flower needs to be this size to conceal the winter window. And this color, the red of a fiat with the top down, to impress us dull as we've grown. Months ago, the gigantic onion of a bulb half above the soil stuck out its green tongue, and slowly, day by day, the flower itself entered our world, closed like hands that captured a moth, then open as eyes open, and the amaryllis, seeing us, was somehow undiscouraged. It stands before us now as we eat our soup. You pour a little of your drinking water into its saucer, and a few crumbs of fragrant earth fall onto the tabletop.
That is the Only Mind by Thich Nhat Hanh. These ramparts of yours, who has promised to build them for you? This morning, suddenly, we find ourselves floating on the ocean amid winds and waves. Suffering itself builds the last shelter in which you will spend the cruelest of nights. Do repeat to me what I have promised. It has been a long time, so that I will be present on that day to serve as your witness. The arrows that struck me, I still bear them in the flesh of my body. They have not been returned. Take good care of your own garden, brother. I am a bird, and like other birds, will only look for fresh water and good seeds. We will be back in your garden. Be the monarch of your life and sign the decree to exile suffering and call back from all points of the universe the power of birds and flowers, the vitality of youth. The whole universe will smile when your eyes smile.
Thank you, Ginger. We are empowered by a vision of hope that justice is, in fact, the fundamental reality of the universe. Such a vision encourages work for justice despite the odds of history. From it, we draw strength for transforming history toward justice. And yet, the call is so great. Economic justice, liberation, renewal of the earth, openness to other religions in mutual dialogue. How can we as individuals possibly answer the magnitude of the call? We can only be involved in a portion of the world and one aspect of the work, and our effectiveness seems terribly small. Do we simply concentrate on our own task and hope others will take responsibility elsewhere? In bits and pieces, will the kingdom come? For those of you who missed this service last week, I want to tell you that Rob came out as a humbug. Not that any of us were surprised at his pronouncement. Many of us feel like a humbug this time of year. Most of us can identify with those Scrooge-like sentiments when we rush around trying to buy that perfect gift that expresses our feelings for everyone on our list. And I will confess that I too have moments of humbug this time of year. So I ask, who doesn't? I got a half tentative raised hand at the 9 o'clock. I got about 4 wildly waving hands in the back at the 11. And some half tentative hands at this service. But I think that this season is a spiritually confusing time. It's a time when the world itself is telling us to slow down, to wait, to stop and focus on the intangibles in our lives. And yet the messages from the world of humanity are just the opposite and shout a different tune. Do, 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 be busy, 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 bye, bye, bye. And this is especially the case for the people, and often in our culture it is the women, who are tacitly put in charge of producing the holidays. At least that's how I feel at my house. I'm in charge of putting on the holidays. I put myself in charge of putting on the holidays. And even when I feel like Ebenezer Scrooge, the show must go on, I pull out the boxes where I know where they are, and I begin to sort through and drag out, and I know where everything else goes. Sometimes I feel depressed, but I know I wouldn't have it any other way. Because actually, I have found that as I'm doing this, often the spirit of Christmas finds me just as it did Mr. Scrooge. It invites me into wonder and into peace. But some years, the invitation doesn't come despite my best efforts. Some years I am left waiting, and the holiday preparations feel hollow, and I feel like a failure at the holidays. And I wait. And in the stillness, in the quiet of a peaceful morning, in the quiet listening for that which does not speak, I sometimes do hear messages. Dreams emerge, wonder comes unbidden, love and generosity come just in time to save my life. This year, I actually decided to be a little more proactive. And in my devotional practice in the morning, I actually asked, how can I not just survive this holiday season, but is there a way to deepen my experience and to flourish this time of year? And I decided to follow the lead of the Dalai Lama and choose kindness. As our beloved colleague Arvid Straube once said, the most important spiritual practice is something that every one of us can do. You don't need to meditate long enough so that you can melt the snow with the heat of your body. Whether we're young or old, we can all practice kindness. The root of the word kindness is kin, and to be kind is to treat one another as kin. But as we often know, it's often our kin with whom we have the most hurtful and unpleasant relationships. So that's not terribly helpful, is it? But let's go one more level deeper. Kinship reminds us that we are all relatives, that we are all connected to one another, connected by common ancestry, that we are all connected in this journey called life. We are all connected in our human struggles to find meaning and purpose. We are all part of the family of humanity. But kindness, what difference could it possibly make? It seems so limited, perhaps even superficial, when so much is at stake in our world. The writer Aldous Huxley is perhaps best known as the author of that startling novel, or one-time startling novel, Brave New World. But in addition to his fiction writing, he was also a well-respected scholar of world religions. Late in his life, an interviewer on the radio asked him, "Dr. Huxley, perhaps more than anyone else alive, you have studied the great spiritual and religious traditions of the world. What have you learned?" He replied, "It's a bit embarrassing to have been concerned with the human problem all one's life and to find at the end that one has no more to offer than way of advice than try to be a little kinder." Now, I imagine that Houston Smith, our friend and today's most revered scholar of world religions, would say much the same thing. try to be a little kinder. So I have been trying to be a little kinder, a little more forgiving of the small things. I've been going to a variety of doctors in preparation for our sabbatical, which is not normative behavior for me. And normally when I do, on those rare occasions, go to the doctor, I stay very tight-lipped during medical procedures and office visits. But now in my kindness regime, I am trying to engage people in friendly conversation and to be sure that I show appreciation for what they're doing. And what I find is that my little, seemingly insignificant acts of kindness come back to me twofold. I've been privileged to hear hard stories. And last week I heard an appropriate but slightly off-color joke. I've laughed with people recently that I would never have spoken to before trying to be just a little bit kinder. I'm also trying to be a little bit kinder to myself, which is always a tricky proposition. But again, I ask, what place does trying to be a little bit kinder have in a world with so much pain and suffering? Am I just fooling myself? Are these efforts to try and be just a little bit kinder actually contributing to a form of cheap grace? It feels good in the moment, but it doesn't really challenge us to change or deepen our souls. It's too easy for those of us who live in privilege to be content with personal generosity and kindness while we remain complicit with larger systems of oppression. But we have to start somewhere. The Dalai Lama reminds us of the wisdom of the Buddha, who is reported to have said that there are 84,000 doors that open to peacefulness and loving kindness in this life. That's a lot of doors to open, and I like to imagine that each act of genuine kindness actually opens one of those doors. In the book, Loving Kindness, John Kabat-Zinn wrote, "If I become a center of love and kindness in this moment, then in a perhaps small but hardly insignificant way, the world now has a nucleus of love and kindness it lacked the moment before. This benefits me and it benefits others." People who involve themselves in the spiritual practice of loving kindness report that the layers of their practice deepen over time and that they do feel the ripples of their practice affects their lives and with those people with whom they come in closest contact. In today's world, however, it's hard to believe that small acts have anything to do with the larger systems at play. But I want to tell you the story about a group of students in the agriculture school at Iowa State, which of course is known as the hotbed of radical activity, so you won't be surprised by my story. A number of years ago, a group of students there were studying the growing effect of multinational corporation on the global economy. They decided that they needed to show these multinational corporations that the world could still respond to small acts, to grassroots actions that could still wield powerful results. They carefully chose an issue that they thought would have broad appeal and was needed desperately. In a small room on the college campus in Ames, Iowa, the Nestle boycott was hatched. It spread around the world, but no one knows. So don't tell, shh. But it began in Ames, Iowa. Now, I took years, of course. It took dogged determination, but as a result of these students, the Nestle Corporation was called into account, and they changed their policy of promoting infant formula in developing countries, and we learned that even in today's world, small acts can ripple out. In the former headquarters of the Nazi war effort in northern France resides now an incredibly moving and powerful museum of peace. It was originally built entirely underground to ensure the safety and security of Nazi staff. Now the lowest level of the museum is dedicated to the recipients of the Nobel Peace Prize. Walking through the hall some years ago, I was struck by what a testimony this hall is to individual courage and action. A woman began planting a tree, and then more trees, and over time inspired others to plant trees. And over time, more than 1 million trees had been planted in Kenya. A man spoke out in righteous indignation and became the voice of a movement. The latest recipient, Muhammad Yunus, is part of a worldwide grassroots effort in micro-lending, which provides small loans to poor people who have no collateral and will not and could not qualify for conventional bank loans. They are given money with the understanding that it is their community that provides collateral. So to get the loan, you have to provide a group that will be your circle of accountability and will stay with you until the debt is paid. And what usually happens, of course, is that that circle stays intact and the people who receive funds moves around the circle. Yunus and the Grameen Bank have enabled millions of Bangladeshis, almost all women, to buy everything from cows to cell phones in order to start and run their own businesses. Microcredit projects have helped people around the world lift themselves out of poverty. This statistic is impressive, and I offer it to you. In 1997, fewer than 8 million families had been serviced by microcredit worldwide. By the end of 2004, some 3,200 institutions reported reaching more than 90 million clients. Yunus came up with the idea of creating a bank based on microcredit when, as a young economics professor, he came into a village and wound up loaning the equivalent of $27 to 42 women who worked in a bamboo factory in Jabra. Those women, of course, formed circles of accountability and supported one another. So it started with an act of empowering kindness and has not yet ended in its ripple effect. And microlending isn't just happening half a world away. Community reinvestment projects are springing up all over the country, in St. Paul and all over the Twin Cities. And a number of Unitarian Universalist congregations are very involved in microlending projects. As Aesop, the writer of fables, said, "No act of kindness, no matter how small, is ever wasted." So in this season of so much rushing, so much yearning for something deeper, better, and true, can we view acts of kindness, our acts of kindness, as our attempts to be in partnership with that which is larger than ourselves? Can we see it as one way to get closer to the mystery? Listen to the words of the poet Rumi. Jars of spring water are not enough anymore. Take us down to the river. The face of peace, the sun itself. No more the slippery cloud-like moon. Give us one clear morning after another. And the one whose work remains unfinished, who is our work as we diminish, idle though occupied, empty and open. Take us to the source of life, of hope, of rebirth. Open our hearts to prepare a place for wonder once more. Take us down to the river of life. Let us touch through small acts the work that remains unfinished. Let us know in our bones that the work is ours to do, and it begins here with our very human efforts to try and be just a bit kinder to ourselves, to one another, to the relatives we love but may not like, to our own failures and disappointments, to those in their very human way are trying to be just a bit kinder to us. God is here. God is in the details as well as in the mystery. That is one of the secrets of God's existence. We are fooled into believing that the word, the expression of God, is only expressed in the grand movements of time and in the grand gestures. But we see the handiwork of the holy here, now, and it is where we can know God most intimately. It is in the ordinary moments where the holy is exposed in us, in the manner in which we order our lives and the life of our beloved community. May it be so, and amen. If you think of the average lifespan as about 90 years, and that, or more, and that you begin to be able to open doors when you're about 2 or 3, I figure that gives you about 34,000 days of opportunities in which to open 84,000 doors of loving kindness and peacefulness. So let us, together, open those doors and see what lies beyond. Hopefully, when you open that door, what you will find is an abundant source of light, of grace and glory. May it be so, and amen.